You're now tuned in to The Investor Show, where we teach simple wealth creation for the common investors with investment advisor, award-winning author, international speaker, and founder of Royal Financial Investment Group, Prince Dykes.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Prince of Investing, Prince Dykes, coming all the way live from the beautiful state of Denver, Colorado. As always, no matter where you're catching us around the globe, don't forget to hit the like, subscribe, comment, share button, and drop comments if you had comments below, or email us at the description box below. But as always, I don't have a lot of time, and I definitely know you guys and girls don't have a lot of time, so we're going to jump straight into it. So as you guys can see in the description box, or in the title, or have you may catch this, today we're going to be talking about franchises, how you can become a franchise owner, or a franchise passive or active owner. We're going to talk about all those differences, don't worry about that, and all the other great stuff. But as you guys can see as well, I have a very, very special guest live here in the studio with me today to talk about the exact, how can you get a franchise? And we always hear about it, but how can you start? Where do you go? Is it a website or whatnot? So today I brought in a very special guest, Ms. Stacy Swift from FranNet. She has over 22 years with FranNet. She's owned about 7 franchises now. Has tremendous experience in the franchising industry and business, and she's here today. We're going to talk about how you can get one, how to start one, not start a franchise, but how you become a franchise owner, all of this stuff like that. Without further ado, let me introduce my guest, Ms. Stacy Swift. How are you doing today, Ms. Swift?
I'm good, Prince. Thank you for having me.
Okay, for my for my listeners out there across the globe, or people that are watching this, who is Stacy Swift?
Well, I am a franchisee myself with FranNet. FranNet is a franchise brokerage and consulting company. Mm-hmm. We've been around, I think, about 32 years now. We've got offices all throughout the United States and Canada, and we're franchise brokers. So we're known in the industry as the franchise matchmakers. What that means is we meet with clients who are interested in franchise ownership, but maybe they don't know where to start, or they don't know what fits them, or what they might be good at, or what they could afford. And that's what we do. So we go through all those things with them. We've got a proprietary process, including a personality profile that's based on NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. And then we sit down with them face-to-face and help build this ideal business model based on what fits them, you know, from what are they good at? What do they like? What do they enjoy? What are they not so good at? What do they want to stay away from? What can they afford to spend? What's the goal? Where are they trying to get? What are they trying to do? All those types of things.
Okay. So essentially, you guys are the first stop someone should go to say, hey, well, someone who's watching this, and the reason why I bring this up, because I like to, you know, bring in other ideas of investing. You know, yes, we know about stocks. We know about bonds and mutual funds and real estate, things like that. But franchise itself could be a good investment, you would say?
For the right person, absolutely. And there's, you know, many different ways you can invest as an active owner operator, where you're working in the business and that's your thing, that's what you're doing. There are other options where you might be more of a passive owner, where we say you manage the manager. So maybe you're building multiple locations and kind of overseeing the operations, but not being in the business every day. So yeah, a lot of options.
Okay, so when you spoke about active versus a passive ownership. So as an investor, you could say, hey, I don't want to actually run the business itself. I can put a manager in place and, you know, essentially fund the business, or, you know, or whatever the case may be, and sit back and have meetings with the manager to keep up with the day-to-day of how that franchise is particularly going.
Yes and no. So there, we hear this passive ownership or semi-absentee ownership model. It's actually growing in the franchise industry. It's becoming more and more popular. But I don't want to mislead anybody and say that you can just invest in a franchise, go to the islands, and collect the money. It doesn't work that way. So even on a passive ownership option or a semi-absentee ownership option, you still have to put some effort into the business. So maybe it's, you know, maybe it's 10 to 20 hours a week or 10 to 15 hours a week as opposed to a full-time job. But yes, as you said, it's more of a manage-the-manager type of model. So they're typically retail or storefront-based concepts, not always, but typically, where you have a manager in that place running the day-to-day operations, and then you are overseeing that manager, maybe a weekly meeting or you know, a couple times weekly, something like that, just to keep up on the business, make sure things are running properly. Or maybe you're working on the marketing on the you know, outside of the actual business, where the manager is actually in the business doing running the day-to-day operations.
Wow. Okay. So now the people always hear this, they say, wow, it sounds brilliant. You know, I grew up, I always drove by McDonald's, I always drove by a Dairy Queen and all these other, you know, a Meineke or whatever franchise that's out there that you see pop up, or Jiffy Lube, or whatever the case may be. And you would turn around and say, well, how can I get one? And I always thought that was for the super rich. How much money does a person need to even consider franchising? Funding. Like, wow, okay, Ms. Swift, I always want to do this. Now I have a place to go. But is this even in my league or things I should want to do?
I think they're more affordable than most people think. So I think a lot of people have the attitude that you just said, that, oh my gosh, it's, they're so expensive, or they're only for the rich people. That's not the case. You know, franchises, I've seen franchise investments for under $100,000 total investment to into the millions, depending on what the business is. Mm-hmm. You know, with FranNet, we represent over 200 different franchise concepts, a wide variety of industries, wide variety of business models. And I would say that the franchises that we work with typically fall in the range of maybe around $100,000 total investment to say up to $400,000 total investment. And there are some on either side of that, but that's where the most of them would fall into. So that total investment number includes your initial franchise license fee, which mm-hmm. is a one-time fee that you pay with any franchise for the rights to be part of the family, you know, to be in that system. Build out equipment, inventory, signage, working capital. That money should also get you to the break-even point in the business. Mm. And then the banks look to you to come to the table with about 25 to 30% of the total investment if you're looking at traditional financing, you know, getting a loan. Your skin in the game is 25 to 30%. You can finance 70 to 75%, assuming you have the collateral to qualify for that loan.
Now, and I want to make it clear out there for everybody that's listening, why do they want you to have the 25 to 30%, you know, of the investment? So for example, let's say if it costs $100,000 for me to get this franchise or whatnot, right? And so it's essentially saying I need to come up with $25,000 to $30,000 to even give it. So why can't I finance the whole thing?
Because that puts you at risk as well. That's your skin in the game. I mean, if you're investing in something that's all somebody else's money, what's to stop you? You know, if things don't go the way you plan, maybe you turn around and just walk away from it. You know, it's a lot harder for you to turn around and walk away from $25,000 or $30,000 of your own money.
So you want to make sure you're on the hook.
Yeah, well, in a sense, I guess, but I don't know of anything. You know, there aren't many things you can mm-hmm. buy or purchase where you need a loan that they'll give you 100%. You know, you have to have, it's a joint venture in a sense that you need to have some skin in the game.
Now, the thing of someone who's out there listening, hey, but I don't have the money and I want to get investors to, you know, get my portion of the money. What are some of the pros and cons of bringing in investors or coming in as a group?
Well, there are a lot of each, I guess. And depending on the business, there may be more cons than pros. Mm. You know, if you're investing in a small business, the more investors you have, the more ways you split the pie. Wow. So you're planning on this small business, or you're counting on this small business producing enough revenue and net income to pay off all of these people. Whereas if it's just you, that's the only person that has to pay off. That's a lot less pressure on the business. Mm-hmm. So that's probably the biggest con. The other con, and I've seen this too many times, I think that we've all heard that it's not always the wisest thing to borrow money from family or friends. I would agree that's true. And I still have clients that come to me every day saying, oh, you know, my brother's going to invest with me, or my dad's going to give me some money or something. And there's nothing wrong with that, but you need to think it through in the beginning. And what happens if things go sideways? Mm. You know, sometimes you have to make a choice. What's more important to you, the relationship or the business? And you just don't want to put yourself in that position. Now, on the flip side, the pros would be that, you know, it could allow you to do something that you couldn't do on your own. If you can't afford to do it and you have somebody who's willing to back you, you know, I would still advise having some kind of written agreement up front that determine what's going to happen. If the business doesn't work out the way you plan, or if something does go sideways, how is it going to get taken care of? Plan that in the beginning so you save the potential negative side on the back end if it happens.
Okay. Now, franchise, when I look at a franchise versus a small business, you know, let's say if I wanted to start a barbecue shop, right? And I have to figure out what the sauce is going to be, where am I going to get the, you know, the ingredients, where I'm going to get the employees, what's going to be my marketing, what's going to be my uniforms, what's, you know, all these things I have to, you know, the branding and all these things you have to consider when starting a business on your own, right? Mm-hmm. So with that being, you know, with your experience, you know, I know you've done both. You've done the traditional side of business, mm-hmm. and you know, ran several franchises, right? Now, what are the, because it sounds easy. It sounds like, wow, you know, of course, man, if I just go over here and just get a franchise, the marketing is done for me. It's kind of like everything is done for you. What are the pros and cons of even having a franchise?
That's a great question. So the pros are, just as you said, that you're not reinventing the wheel. A franchise is a proven system, a proven model that somebody else has already done. They've worked out the kinks, they figured out what works, what doesn't work, and you're buying into that system. So a good definition of a franchise, I think, is it's a cookie cutter model that is easily replicated with predictable results. So if it works in New York, and it works in Florida, and it works in California, why wouldn't it work in Denver, Colorado, if you followed the same basic model? That's franchising in a nutshell. Those are the pros, that you don't have to, you just have to follow this system. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. Mm. The cons, I think the biggest negative that I hear from people is, you know, with a franchise, you pay a royalty. So a royalty is a percentage of your gross revenues, not your gross profits, big difference, gross revenues. So with a franchise, you're going to pay.
I want to cut you off there for a second. What's the difference between the gross revenues and the gross profits?
Well, if your revenues are X, and then you take out your expenses, and then what's left is your profit. So if your gross revenues, let's just use a round number. Say your gross revenues are $100,000, and your expenses are $50,000, then your net profit is $50,000. So in a franchise, you pay the royalty on the gross revenues. You pay it on the $100,000, not on the net, the $50,000. And a royalty, again, it's the percentage of those gross revenues. Typical royalties are somewhere in the 5 to 12% range. And a lot of times when I talk with people about that, we get the big eyes like, oh my gosh, why would I pay 5 to 12% of my hard-earned money back to this company? There's a lot of reasons that you would pay it. I mean, I'm a franchisee now and I pay it. So it's, you know, we have back office support, we have IT support, we have marketing support, we have digital marketing support, we have a PR firm. All those things I have access to because I pay into this royalty fund that all of my colleagues, all of my franchise colleagues pay into as well, so that we can share in this. If I had to do all those things on my own in my small business, it would cost me a lot more than 5 to 12%.
That's very true. For a prime example, I like to say, most franchises, they probably spent $1 billion already, you know, in marketing and, you know, marketing and placements and things like that, that you're jumping into. You know, it would be like me starting an ice cream shop today versus getting a Dairy Queen that's been around since, you know, God knows how long. It has a proven system that has spent so much money in marketing and branding and partnerships and things like that. So I could understand a royalty fee because you're essentially using their name. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to really, so when you do have the franchise, do you have to do your own marketing, or do you just kind of let the corporation do it and you just?
No, typically you do your own marketing. In most franchises, you're buying a protected territory. So it may be outlined by zip codes or street boundaries or counties or even a whole state, depending on what you buy for your territory. So it's part of your business expenses or your responsibility to market within that territory. But the marketing materials may be designed and developed and provided for you. So if you had to go hire a professional marketing department to design and develop, you know, flyers or brochures or online digital marketing things for you, that could cost you a fortune.
instead of just plugging in your name and address.
Exactly.
Got it.
That's a good way to put it, yeah.
Plugging in. Yeah. So now the thing about it, when we spoke about funding, is a very interesting thing that I learned from you is that you can actually use your retirement plan, you know, like your qualified 401k or 403, things like that, to actually come up with your funding to actually fund a business. Is that correct?
Hugely popular in our industry. And it's it amazes me that it's still relatively unknown, but it's been around since, I believe, 1979. You can use retirement funds to invest in a new business and pay no tax and pay no penalty. It's completely legal. I believe you get a letter of approval from the IRS. There are some fantastic top-notch companies out there who facilitate these programs. I wouldn't do it with a fly-by-night company by any means. Mm-hmm. You need to go with a good company who can help you set it up, make sure that all your I's are dotted and your T's are crossed. But absolutely, for our clients, I would say it's, you know, I'm going to guess it's probably in the 80 to 90% that people use. They self-fund the business. The pros of it are that you're self-funding. So there's no interest. There's no monthly payment. You're using your own money to invest. You're just diversifying your investments, if you will. Whereas if you, you know, the negatives might be that if you're not comfortable, if that's your retirement nest egg and that's what you want to count on it for, and you're not comfortable, then you shouldn't do it. You know that. I think that's the risk. But it's, again, it's diversifying your investment. It's saying maybe you want to leave some of it in the market or in your 401k with whomever's managing it. And then you want to take a piece of it and invest in yourself in this business. You know, you're hoping this will grow just as you're hoping this will grow. If you invest X in a business, you're hoping that in, you know, 3, 4, 5 years from now, it's worth 2, 3, 4 times X, if that makes sense.
Okay, that's very interesting. And I can understand that because I guess, you know, it's still an investment. You know, it's
absolutely
not like you're taking out the money to go buy a car, or do something else.
You're
like,
not
hey,
spending it.
Yes.
You're investing it. And
you're
there's
pretty
a
much just
big difference.
It to another business, form a business, and it's going like, hey.
That you hope will grow as well. So I think that's the piece that people don't seem to get past. They think, well, I can't spend my retirement funds. Well, your retirement funds are now invested in the market somewhere, probably by somebody you've never met. You're trusting that, hoping it will grow. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, look back to 2008, 2009, where we all saw it go this way.
Yeah.
So now you're taking a piece of it, and I don't ever advocate taking everything you have and putting it over here, but maybe you take a piece of it and invest in a business. So you're really just investing in yourself. Do you believe in your own abilities that you can take this and make this business successful and then grow the money that way?
Okay. Now, because I'm pretty sure you probably have to pay some back or something. Well, I guess it would be the same thing if you got traditional finance and you have to pay, you know, pay the financial institution back. So with this one, I guess you'll pay your 401k back. Now, the thing is, you know, we see franchises that close, right? You know, we see franchises close all the time, whether it's a Popeye's chicken, a KFC, or whatnot. What are some of the things that you see? Why do franchises fail, or what make them fail? You know, I want to talk about that downside of, you know, I want to say, hey, it's all good. You know, just everybody grab a franchise tomorrow and, you know, see you in Beverly Hills. You know, you want to say, hey, well, what about the downside? What makes these franchises fail?
I'm going to say the downside is no different than any small business, whether it's a franchise or an independent small business. Mm-hmm. Any business can fail. So in small business across the board, the number one reason for failure is undercapitalization. Mm-hmm. So people get into the business with not enough money to get over the bump. If they hit a bump in the road, they can't get over it. So that's number one that I think you have to be, you know, if you're taking everything you have and investing in this business, I would never advise that. You have to have some flexibility, or just know that if something doesn't go exactly as planned, that you've got a cushion or you've got something to help you get past that. So undercapitalization is the number one reason for failure. With franchises, another reason is people simply not following the system.
Wow. And the thing is, I would look at it and say, well, how can I be undercapitalized if I'm following the model? Because the model is saying, hey, you know, your first, I'm guessing the model would say, hey, your first 3 years, you know, you're going to need this much money. You're not going to probably make any money. So you need to have XYZ, you know, you need to have $100,000, $50,000, $30,000, whatever the case may be. And if I follow that money, is it still a possible way I could be undercapitalized?
Absolutely. It's an estimate. It's a range. And there are things that are out of our control. Let's say down in the South is a good example. Maybe you get your business open and in the first year, like we've seen in the last few years, maybe a big hurricane comes. Maybe your business is closed for a month. Did you count on that in your business? I mean, you're probably still going to have to pay your rent to the landlord, but you have no revenue coming in. So you couldn't predict that. So those, you know, and there's a million scenarios like that. But I think no matter what the business is, nobody can tell you exactly that you need X amount of cash and that's going to make it all perfect. So whatever that X amount is, I would always add a cushion onto that to say, just in case something happens that I couldn't predict, you need to have that cushion to be. And a lot of people don't do that, unfortunately. They say, you know what? I just know this is going to work and everything is going to go exactly as I planned. So I'm just going to go in with this amount of money and, you know, let's give it a shot. It's just not wise.
You're not the smartest decision. So. Definitely. And, you know, and the reason why I asked that question is to say, if I have a proven system that so many people have used, how could I possibly find myself in a situation of, hey, I don't have enough money to do XYZ, but you made a very good point. You know, we can't predict sales. We can't predict natural disasters. We can't predict, I don't know.
You can't predict owners either. What if you buy this business and you have exactly what they told you and you're following the system, but you just think, oh, you know what? This is going to go so well. And you go out and buy a Rolls Royce. There's just a ton of things you can't predict.
Got it. Okay. So, is there anything else you want people to, I think that, you know, we hit on the top, we know a lot of great topics as well, talking about funding with your retirement. We spoke about starting franchises, the pros and cons, passive and active managing, ownership of a business. We talked about the pros and cons of just what can go wrong, what goes right, what makes people fail. Well, I want to hit you on this one. I know that you was telling me about, I think it's a guy that owns like a mining key here in Denver somewhere, or that just done extremely well or whatnot. What sets people apart, or like what are the secret or the characteristics that you see people that are successful at it? Because we spoke about what makes people do bad. What are the characteristics that make people be successful? Is that, hey, I just followed the system and got lucky? Or is it some characteristics that you see?
I would say people who are not afraid to work. You know, I think that's a misperception we hear about franchising too, that, oh gosh, it's a franchise, it can't fail. That's not true. You know, the franchise system provides you that proven system, the model, the structure, the blueprint to follow, but it's up to you to execute. They don't run your business for you. So you still have to get in there and do whatever is necessary to make that business work or to make that business successful. Mm-hmm. So I think, to me, that's a great characteristic for a franchise owner, or a successful franchise owner. You have to get in there and do what needs to be done, and don't assume it's just going to happen. So there's hard work involved. But yeah, you can absolutely grow to multiple locations. You can scale it that way. You can... you know, put a manager in place and kind of move on to the next one and the next one and the next one if you want to do that. Or you may be happy with one single unit. That's perfectly fine also.
Okay. So now that people know where to start, how can they reach out to you? How can they find you? How can they be the first step?
There's two websites. So we can go to franchisematchmakers.com. That's a website for our local territory. So my office covers 5 states, Colorado, Wyoming, Montana, Utah, and Nevada. And that's our local website, franchisematchmakers.com. And then the frannet.com is our national website. And you can certainly reach us that way as well.
Okay. So, well, everybody out there, they know how to get in contact with you. They know how to get in contact with you. They know where to start. They know the pros and cons of owning a franchise and becoming a franchise owner, funding, the pros and cons of having investors. It sounds great. Hey, let's all get together and let's own a franchise. But, you know, it's some cons to that as well. So we talked about the royalties that we can pay back. Is there anything else that you want to leave our listeners and viewers?
And I will say quickly, just for if somebody's just looking for education, mm-hmm. FranNet on a national basis does, we do webinars every month. So mm-hmm. once a month we do a business ownership exploration webinar. Mm-hmm. It's a you can sign into it from the website or you can register for it from the website. It's everything's free. It's about an hour, but it's a great starter. If you just want to sit at home and listen into that webinar, we record them all as well. So if you can't make the next one, just contact one of us, contact your local FranNet office, and we can send you the link so you can listen to it on your own time. And then my office, covering the five Mountain West states, we do once a month something that we call Change Your Life Over Lunch. Mm-hmm. And it's a 30-minute webinar on the second Friday of every month, right over the lunch hour, 12 to 12:30 Mountain Time. And we feature a different franchise concept every month in 30 minutes. So it's a great way that you can sit at your desk or sit at home and eat your lunch and listen into the webinar and learn about a different type of a business or a different concept every month. And again, they're always free. You just register online and we record those as well, so we can send those links. And those recordings are on our franchisematchmakers.com website. So you can look back at, I don't know, the last 10 months or so and learn about a lot of different businesses.
All right. Well, once again, ladies and gentlemen, that is our time. I want to first thank Ms. Stacia Swift for taking time out of her day to come down and be in the studio and to do the show. But as always, don't forget to hit the like, subscribe, comment, and share button. Until the next video, podcast, or whatever else you see me do crazy around the globe, peace, be safe, I'm out, and thank you.